the philosopher John Rawls might include something like the following. Always devise your rules as if you didn't know whether you were going to be at the top or the bottom of the pecking order. An alleged Inuit system for sharing out food is a practical example of the Rawls principle. The individual who cuts up the food gets last pick. In my own amended Ten Commandments, I would choose some of the above, but I would also try to find room for, among others,
enjoy your own sex life, so long as it damages nobody else, and leave others to enjoy theirs in private, whatever their inclinations, which are none of your business. Do not discriminate or oppress on the basis of sex, race, or, as far as possible, species. Do not indoctrinate your children. Teach them how to think for themselves, how to evaluate evidence, and how to disagree with you. Value the future on a timescale longer than your own.
But never mind these small differences of priority. The point is that we have almost all moved on, and in a big way, since biblical times. Slavery, which was taken for granted in the Bible and throughout most of history, was abolished in civilized countries in the 19th century. All civilized nations now accept what was widely denied up to the 1920s, that a woman's vote, in an election or on a jury, is the equal of a man's. In today's enlightened societies, a category that manifestly does not include, for example, Saudi Arabia, women are no longer regarded as property, as they clearly were in biblical times. Any modern legal system would have prosecuted Abraham for child abuse, and if he had actually carried through his plan to sacrifice Isaac, we would have convicted him of first-degree murder. Yet, according to the mores of his time, his conduct was entirely admirable, obeying God's commandment. Religious or not, we have all changed massively in our attitude to what is right and what is wrong. What is the nature of this change, and what drives it? In any society, there exists a somewhat mysterious consensus which changes over the decades, and for which it is not pretentious to use the German loanword Zeitgeist, spirit of the times. I said that female suffrage was now universal in the world's democracies, but this reform is in fact astonishingly recent. Here are some dates at which women were granted the vote.
New Zealand, 1893. Australia, 1902. Finland, 1906. Norway, 1913. United States, 1920. Britain, 1928. France, 1945. Belgium, 1946. Switzerland, 1971. Kuwait, 2006.
This spread of dates through the 20th century is a gauge of the shifting zeitgeist. Another is our attitude to race. In the early part of the 20th century, almost everybody in Britain, and many other countries too, would be judged racist by today's standards. Most white people believed that black people, in which category they would have lumped the very diverse Africans with unrelated groups from India, Australia, and Melanesia, were inferior to white people in almost all respects except, patronizingly, sense of rhythm. The 1920s equivalent of James Bond was that cheerfully debonair boyhood hero Bulldog Drummond. In one novel, The Black Gang, Drummond refers to Jews, foreigners, and other unwashed folk. In the climax scene of The Female of the Species, Drummond is cleverly disguised as Pedro, black servant of the arch-villain. For his dramatic disclosure to the reader as well as to the villain that Pedro is really Drummond himself, he could have said, "You think I'm Pedro. Little do you realise I'm your arch-enemy Drummond blacked up." Instead, he chose these words. "Every beard is not false, but every nigger smells. That beard ain't false, dearie, and dis nigger don't smell. So I'm thinking there's something wrong somewhere." I read it in the 1950s, 3 decades after it was written, and it was just still possible for a boy to thrill to the drama and not notice the racism. Today it would be inconceivable. Thomas Henry Huxley, by the standards of his times, was an enlightened and liberal progressive. But his times were not ours, and in 1871 he wrote the following.
"No rational man, cognizant of the facts, believes that the average Negro is the equal, still less the superior of the white man. And if this be true, it is simply incredible that, when all his disabilities are removed and our prognathous relative has a fair field and no favour, as well as no oppressor, he will be able to compete successfully with his bigger-brained and smaller-jawed rival in a contest which is to be carried on by thoughts and not by bites.